Your pregnancy is both of those things.
Yes, but have you not seen how people respond to a pregnant woman?
By the way his brow furrowed, no, he hadn't.
Everyone's suddenly an expert on babies, and they're all full of advice and nosy-ass questions. I'm glad my stomach's not that big. People are a hell of a lot worse if there's a bump. They try rubbing it like it's a damn genie-infested lamp.
Genie-infested? He chuckled.
You get my point.
I do. How about this? If anyone seems like they're about to say anything inappropriate or touch your belly, I'll step in and interrupt the conversation.
That would be good.
Then that's what I'll do.
Tanner folded his arms.
On another note, Keenan said you called Lucien earlier.
Harper nodded.
I thought it best that he found out about the pregnancy from me.
How did he take the news?
She pursed her lips as she thought back to the conversation.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Lucien burst out. Harper sighed.
Lucien.
It's not enough that you mated the psychopathic bastard. You're now going to have his psychopathic spawn?
Hey, my child is not psychopathic.
Don't kid yourself. If it takes after you, it'll be a treasure. If it takes after him, it'll be a living nightmare.
Harper scratched her chin.
He took it pretty well.
Tanner snorted in disbelief. The door behind her creaked open, and Knox's cologne drifted to her. She turned as he and Levi entered the small space. She couldn't stop a smile from curving her mouth as she got a good look at him in all his GQ motherfucking glory. No one had the right to exude so much sex appeal. No one. But as he crossed to her, emanating raw power and masculine intensity, a hot and heavy need unfurled inside her.
And he's all mine,
she thought to herself. Her demon was just as smug about it. Knox actually stopped in his tracks as he absorbed the sight of her. Standing there in the pure white, sleeveless, ankle-length, one-shoulder dress, she made him think of a mythological Greek goddess. Her ivory skin had tanned into a pretty gold shade that matched the ends of her dark hair and gave her skin a healthy glow. Her hair was currently bunched up into some kind of elegant updo that appeared to look deliberately tousled. Best of all, he could see part of his brand on her breast. Knox crossed to her with a smile and slid an arm around her.
You look beautiful. Sorry about the delay.
He fingered one of her white gold earrings. As always, seeing her wearing something he'd bought her stoked the possessive streak in him. He gently rubbed her stomach as he reached out and gently touched the baby's mind. All he sensed was contentment.
You ready?
Not really.
It will be fine.
He kissed her.
Now, we need to be clear on a few things. At no point tonight will you be on your own. When it's time to work the room, I'll be with you. When you need to use the restrooms, Larkin will accompany you. It's not that any of us believe you're in danger from our lair. It's that we refuse to take any chances.
I don't want to take chances either.
Good.
He stroked her stomach again.
I'll go begin the announcement. You know when to join me, don't you?
Don't worry. I haven't forgotten anything.
Let your anxiety go, baby. Don't let them see you nervous.
She nodded and breathed away the tension in her spine.
That's my girl.
Knox released her and slipped out from behind the curtain. The murmurs and laughter died down as people spotted him, and all eyes turned his way as he crossed to the stand in the center of the dais, where a microphone waited. His amplified voice came over the sound system as he spoke.
First of all, thank you all for making it here tonight. I'll begin by assuring you that this isn't a gathering to discuss the horsemen or any issue within the lair. I've called you here because I have some good news to share. He paused for effect. In approximately 2 months, there will be a new addition to the lair.
There was a rustle of fabric as the curtain opened, and then Harper and Tanner stepped out. Tanner and Levi melted into the shadows, while Harper crossed the space to Knox. In that dress, her bump wasn't at all obvious, but enough of the crowd caught his meaning to study her closely. Then, applause and cheers rang throughout the room.
"It isn't something you need to keep secret," Knox told them when the applause faded. "But news travels fast among our kind, and we wanted you all to hear it first."
A waiter stepped up onto the dais and handed Knox 2 glasses. One was filled with champagne and the other with water, at Knox's earlier request. He gave Harper her glass, and they both then raised them to the crowd, who raised theirs right back. Knox clinked his glass against Harper's, and they both sipped at their drinks.
"Now we mingle," he said. "Just a couple of hours, then we can leave."
Bracing herself, Harper inhaled deeply. The sense of perfume, cologne, fresh flowers, and scented candles washed over her, making her nose wrinkle.
"Let's get it over with."
Her low heels clicked along the glossy hardwood floor as she walked off the dais. People immediately came forward, faces beaming.
"Congratulations!"
one of them fairly sang. Harper returned the smile.
"Thanks."
The 2 words were repeated over and over as a continuous flow of people passed on their best wishes. Harper's face soon began to ache from smiling. As Knox charmed them all, Harper mostly just sipped from her glass. She had to admit, her mind occasionally drifted, especially when any of them tried chatting business. Hell, even watching champagne bubbles rise in the flutes was more entertaining than that at times. Of course, the boredom was often alleviated by those people who, just as she'd predicted, had some advice to impart. Some were nice about it and seemed to mean well. Others spoke with a smugly omniscient voice that grated on her nerves and pissed off her demon. By the sheer force of her will, Harper had held her smile in place and accepted their wisdom with a nod. As he'd promised, Tanner stepped in when it became too awkward. Thankfully, no one tried touching her stomach, because she wouldn't have been able to bite back any snarky remarks if they had. The whole thing might have been easier if it wasn't so damn hot. Knox must have sensed that it was getting too much because he moved her to stand directly beneath one of the ceiling fans. She gave him a grateful smile, and then people once more appeared at their side. Again, Harper mostly stayed silent and just sipped from her glass.
"Here," said Larkin.
She exchanged Harper's nearly empty glass of water for another. The ice cubes tinkled against the deliciously cold champagne flute. Harper eagerly sipped from it, and a cube of ice bumped her lip.
"You're a gem,"
the harpy smiled. "And you're doing well, considering you're probably screaming inside your head." Harper couldn't deny it. If it hadn't been for the reassuring pressure of Knox's warm hands, she would have undoubtedly snapped at someone by now. If his fingers weren't splayed on her back, they were cupping her elbow or massaging her nape. Sometimes he kept his arm curled around her waist, as if suspecting that she wanted to bolt, which she did. He also laid the occasional soothing kiss on her temple, palm, hair, or wrist. Each touch was a reminder that he was there, A reassurance that she was doing fine, and a reward for not complaining. Those touches and kisses also helped keep her demon at ease. It didn't like crowds or mingling any more than Harper did. At that moment, the concierge appeared and spoke quietly into Knox's ear. He then gave him a helpless shrug and waited patiently. Sighing, Knox turned to Harper.
I'll be back in just a minute. You'll be all right?
Okay.
I'll be fine. I need to go pee anyway. Too much water.
Mouth curving into a smile, he kissed her.
I won't be long.
Her demon hissed at the sight of him leaving, feeling abandoned. Harper turned to Larkin.
Restroom?
The harpy gestured ahead of them. This way. Harper followed her, trying not to make eye contact with anyone for fear that they saw it as an invitation to approach. But sadly, it wasn't enough. Mere steps away from the restroom, a small woman with a beehive appeared in her path. Harper recognized Polly as a regular at the coffee house. She was nice enough, but she was also a terrible gossip.
"Congratulations," said Polly, beaming. "I'm just so happy for you. When is the baby due?"
Harper had been asked that question so many times throughout the night that she found herself grinding her teeth.
"I have 8 weeks left to go."
8 weeks?
Polly's eyes widened.
"Really?"
She assessed Harper carefully.
"Your belly is quite small for someone so far along."
It wasn't a compliment. It was a judgment.
Like Harper was deliberately depriving her child of the nutrition it needed or something.
At her side, Tanner stiffened, so Harper put a hand on his arm to stay him. Polly smiled at her again.
"I'll bet you're hoping it's a little girl."
No. Harper was just hoping the baby was healthy.
"Are you scared about, you know, the labor?"
Of course she was, but she'd obviously rather not discuss it with someone who was essentially a stranger. Polly moved closer and spoke in a low voice.
"I won't lie. It's not a walk in the park. I told myself that I wouldn't have any pain relief, and I'd do it all natural. But God, the pain!
Honey, I don't envy you at all, you poor thing." She patted Harper's hand.
"My Aliyah? Her head was huge. Tore me right open until my vagina and anus was just one big hole.
I had to have so many stitches, I could hardly walk afterwards. What made it worse was that I lost so much blood, I had to have a transaction."
"A transfusion," Harper corrected.
"That, too. Don't you worry none about putting on weight. Some men, well, they like a woman with a bit more cushion."
Harper forced a smile.
"That is a comfort. Now, I don't mean to be rude, but I need to use the restroom."
"Oh, of course. I apologize for keeping you.
Have a good evening."
Harper raced to the door. Tanner then leaned his back against the wall, on guard, as she and Larkin headed inside. Larkin entered first, and she'd only taken 3 steps when she came to an abrupt halt.
"Well, well, well. I didn't expect to see you here."
Harper peered around her and inwardly cursed as she saw Carla leaning over the sink, chest heaving. Her demon hissed, wanting to claw the bitch. Carla stood upright, her movements stiff and awkward, eyes flaring. In all the time she'd come across Carla over the years, Harper hadn't seen the woman experience any real depth of emotion. Oh, she'd seen flashes of feelings, such as irritation or anxiety in Carla's eyes, but nothing deep.
Right then, however, Carla was seething. And that, Harper thought, was bad. A narcissist in a rage was an irrational creature, though perhaps not as irrational as a she-demon that had an unborn child to protect. Not wanting to appear as though she was cowering behind the sentinel, Harper moved to Larkin's side. The harpy went rigid, not liking it, but she didn't argue. Harper was their prime. It was her right to deal with whatever came next. She was about to advise Carla to scamper when she spoke.
I came because I needed to know if you'd found out something about the real horseman. I want my son's name cleared. Imagine my fucking surprise when I heard that you're...
Carla cut off, as if the sentence would be too hard to finish. Larkin jutted out her chin.
You should leave.
It wasn't a suggestion. Carla gave a mocking smile.
But I should be part of the celebrations, right? I'll be a grandmother, she said bitterly.
Larkin arched a brow.
How can you be a grandmother when you're not even a mother?
Carla flushed, and her gaze cut to Harper.
Nothing to say?
She huffed.
Well, that's a first.
Larkin's right, said Harper, tone flat.
You need to leave.
Harper might not have particularly wanted to make a public announcement, but she sure didn't want anyone spoiling the evening. Fingers flexing, Carla crossed to Harper.
You took my baby from me.
Her lips trembled, and then pressed into a flat line.
How is it fair that you now get to have your own?
Fair? The woman wanted to talk about fair?
And I was your baby once, began Harper. But you gave me away. You sold me. But that was only after aborting me and trapping my soul in a jar didn't work. So with all that in mind, how is it fair that you would think to judge me for anything?
Carla scowled. There was no flicker of guilt, no ounce of regret, just sheer fury.
Rowan! This isn't about him, Harper scoffed, voice hoarse as she fought her demon from surfacing. Oh, I'm not denying that you're upset by his death. He was your son. You cared about him, in your way. But this isn't why you're standing here, shaking with rage. No. You're pissed because you wanted the lair to turn against me for killing Rowan, but they didn't.
Carla's eyes flickered.
You want, as the grieving mother, to be the center of attention. But you're not. For you, that's hell in its purest form.
Because Carla needed attention like she needed to breathe. It gave her a feeling of worth that nothing else ever would.
Especially since the person getting the attention you desperately want is me. Someone who sees right through your bullshit. Isn't that right, Mother?
Just as the concierge had said, Malden and one of his sentinels were waiting near the boardroom where Knox had held a meeting with the Primes only weeks ago. He gave Knox and Levi a courteous nod, lines of strain marking his face.
Knox, I'm sorry if I've disturbed anything. I heard you were here and hoped I might have the chance to speak with you. It's important.
All right.
Knox swiped his key in the door lock and opened it, allowing all four of them to slip inside the boardroom. Closing the door, he turned to Malden.
What can I help you with?
Malden hesitated.
I've been arguing with myself for weeks about whether or not to tell you this.
Knox's brows lifted.
Tell me what?
Again, Malden hesitated.
I know what Jonas wants from Lucifer.
Knox hid his surprise. Go on. Malden sighed, looking sad.
I've known Jonas a long time. I've always respected him as a person and a fellow prime. We often have dinner together at each other's homes. A few months ago, we had dinner and drank a little too much hard liquor. We got to talking about the horsemen. Like Thatcher, Jonas is not convinced that they're real. He said no one would be stupid enough to go up against you without having the kind of backup that you could never hope to fight. I'll admit, I thought he made a valid point.
What else did he say?
He said a lot of things. Not all of them made sense. Like I told you, we were drunk. He talked about how tired he was of conspiracies and bullies and people always hungry for power. He said he could understand why some might be prepared to make a deal with Lucifer. Said that he himself was tempted. I was shocked.
Impatient, Knox asked bluntly, What does he want from Lucifer?
An archdemon. Everything inside Knox stilled. But he didn't betray his shock. He and his demon studied Malden closely. Had the Prime guessed what he was? Had he come here with a bullshit story to test Knox's response to the mention of his kind? Knox didn't believe so, but he wasn't ready to dismiss the idea.
An archdemon, he echoed flatly.
You can understand why, can't you? Archdemons are cruel, brutal, pitiless. They can't be harmed by the flames of hell because they are the flames of hell. But I remember how the rogue archdemon nearly destroyed the world. I believe in the old adage that what's born in hell should stay in hell. I told him that. He said that I was right. Said that it would take a deal with Lucifer to have possession of an archdemon anyway, and that he had nothing that the devil could possibly want. But what if he has thought of something that Lucifer could want? After all, why else would he request a meeting with him?
Knox folded his arms. Have you talked to Jonas about it?
Yes. After the boardroom meeting, I went to his house. I asked him if he had something to do with what happened to Harper and her cousin. He denied any involvement in it, but he admitted that, yes, he was prepared to make a deal with the devil. However, he wouldn't tell me what it is that he's prepared to give Lucifer. He said that it would never happen anyway, so what did it matter?
Knox narrowed his eyes. Why didn't you come to me with this straight away?
You went on vacation, Malden sighed, admitting, and I struggled with the idea of betraying someone who's been a friend to me all my life. I shall be honest with you. This is not me showing my loyalty to you. This is me being concerned that my friend is going to do something very stupid that leads to his own death. You talk to Lucifer. I'm hoping you will ask him to turn down whatever offer Jonas makes him.
I won't need to, said Knox. Lucifer has no interest in Jonas or any other prime.
Malden's shoulders relaxed a fraction. That is good to hear. I hope it will remain that way for all our sakes. Whatever you are, Knox, I doubt even you would be a match for an archdemon.
With that comment, he signaled for his sentinel to follow him out of the room. Once they were gone, Levi raised his brows.
For a minute there, I thought he suspected that you were, and he was here to test his theory.
So did I, said Knox. But I think he's telling the truth. For some reason, Jonas wants an archdemon. I'd like to know what that reason is, and if it's at all related to what's been happening to and around Harper.
Knox, said Tanner, voice brisk. I went to check on Harper in the restrooms, since she was taking a while. It turns out that she's having a verbal standoff with Carla.
He swore, and his demon went apeshit.
I'll be right there.
Carla's here. Levi's face hardened.
Tell me the bitch is nowhere near Harper.
Knox wished he could. Storming out of the room, he locked it with a swipe of his keycard and headed for the ballroom. He reached out to Larkin.
Why am I hearing from Tanner that Carla's confronting Harper?
Harper's co-prime, Knox, replied Larkin. She has every right to put one of her lair in their place. It was a gentle, respectful reminder. If I thought she needed my protection, I'd jump in.
She'll be all right, Knox, said Levi, hot on his heels. She'd better be.
Knox pushed open the ballroom door and went straight to the women's restrooms. He shoved open the door in time to hear Harper say, Isn't that right, Mother? Unwilling to give Carla the satisfaction of seeing just how infuriated she'd managed to make him, Knox hid his rage behind a blank mask as he stalked inside. No one said a word. Tanner and Larkin, who were stood slightly behind Harper, gave him a respectful nod as they moved aside to let him pass. Carla's gaze skipped to his, and he was surprised by just how much anger blazed there. Harper didn't react at all to his presence. She hadn't moved an inch, and her stare remained fixed on Carla. His demon respected that, but it also wanted Harper to move very far away from the threat in front of her. Knox sidled up to Harper, glaring down at the she-demon who'd birthed her, yet was nothing at all like her.
And just why are you here?
Even he heard the lethal note in his tone. Carla's mouth tightened.
I have every right to be here.
Do you?
He drawled.
I have 3 more weeks.
No, you don't. As of this moment, you are no longer part of this lair.
Shock flashed across her face.
What?
I'm unsure why you're so surprised. This is the second time you've confronted one of your primes. That level of disrespect isn't tolerated by this lair. As Harper's mate, I'll never tolerate it. Consider yourself lucky that you're not being punished before being cast out. Not that I'm taking pity on you. No, I just refuse to waste any of my time or attention on you.
His demon surfaced, delighting in the way she paled and cowered.
Leave, it ordered. Never bother what's mine again.
Fists clenched. Carla hurried out of the room with her head held high. Knox's demon signaled for both sentinels to leave, but they lingered, clearly worried for Harper.
I'll be fine, she assured them.
When the door closed behind the sentinels, she turned to the demon and held up her hand.
Don't tell me I should have called for you and Knox. I wasn't in physical danger, and I had Larkin with me.
Not in physical danger,
it allowed.
But the child needs you relaxed, not stressed. Luckily, it is sleeping.
Harper tilted her head. How do you know that? Demons could touch each other's minds, sure, and they could even pick up surface vibes of emotion, but that was all. Even anchor bonds weren't invasive. It wasn't possible to sense emotions, pick up private thoughts, or know if the other was sleeping. Yet the demon before her claimed to know something it not only shouldn't, but that she didn't know.
I know plenty,
it told her.
Be more alert and cautious, little Sphinx. The child will not respond well to you hurting.
Harper's stomach dropped. What does that mean?
Because it sounded like a warning.
It is best that you have no cause to find out.
It skimmed its thumb along her jaw.
I don't like the smell of your fear.
I don't fear you.
But his words, yeah, they were freaking her out. Its black eyes softened ever so slightly.
No, you don't.
It kissed her hard and long, hand clasping her nape possessively. Finally, it retreated. She swallowed as she looked up at Nox.
What did it mean, Nox?
Hearing the tremble in her voice, he pulled her close and kissed her hair.
Shh!
She grabbed his arms.
What did it mean?
Nox's jaw clenched.
It's not sharing the answer with me.
Confused, she shook her head.
Why would it keep things from you?
It thinks that we're not ready to know.
Harper's breath caught in her throat, and her demon felt the urge to slap his demon seriously hard. She put a hand to her chest.
I really don't like the sound of that.
Nox couldn't say he much liked the sound of it either.
The demon might simply have been trying to scare you into being more careful.
Maybe, Harper thought. But the demon claimed not to like the smell of her fear, and she couldn't imagine it deliberately frightening her. Still, it was the answer that made the most sense, because there was literally no fucking way that the demon should have an invasive bond with the baby.
Can we go home now?
Yes, we can go home.
Chapter 16. Nox was buttoning his shirt a few days later when Harper walked into the closet, streaks of lemon paint on her face and clothes. She looked so damn cute that he had to smile. Then he noticed she was carrying a hamper.
What's that you have there, baby?
It's a gift basket from Lou. She held up a card that read, Some stuff for baby L. I found it on the dining room table. It was the third gift that Lou had sent. Nox sighed.
I'm not sure there's any way to get him to stop.
Harper pulled out little white hats, booties, bodysuits, mittens, and sleep suits from the basket. As she unfolded one particular bodysuit, she sighed and then turned it to face him. It read, This baby got back. His mouth quirked in spite of his annoyance. As she put down the hamper, Nox pulled her close and breathed in her scent.
I missed you.
He kissed her, licking into her mouth, enjoying her taste. He'd been in his office most of the night while Harper enjoyed a visit from Jolene, Martina, and Beck. His demon had been an absolute pain in the ass the whole time, because it didn't like not being near her. Harper let out a little grunt and put a hand to the side of her rounded stomach.
This kid sure can kick.
Nox smiled.
Did you think there was any chance that you and I would produce a docile baby?
I guess not. He replaced her hand with his, feeling a thud.
Personally, I think it's protesting that you want to leave the house,
he joked. He'd hoped to visit the Sanders and Macaulay without her, but he hadn't expected her to stay behind. Harper's jaw set.
I'm coming with you. Deal with it, Thorn.
If it makes you feel any better, the stuff I ordered for the nursery will be delivered tomorrow. That means I'll be pretty busy over the next couple of days, so you won't have to worry about me leaving the house. On the one hand, that did make him feel better. On the other hand,
I don't want you to feel confined or suffocated.
So far, I don't.
Good.
Looking at the streaks of paint on her face, he smiled.
You have no idea how cute you look right now.
He kissed her again, ending it with a bite to her lower lip.
Finished painting?
There's a little left to do. Keenan's agreed to finish it for me while we go visit the Sanders. She rubbed Knox's upper arms. I need to take a quick shower.
If I wasn't almost dressed, I'd shower with you.
She smiled and pressed a kiss to his throat. I won't be long. It was no more than an hour later that they pulled up outside the Sanders house. Like last time, both Levi and Tanner decided to accompany them inside. Wyatt opened the door, looking weary and resigned. He'd clearly been expecting them. Having led them into the kitchen, he said,
Congratulations on the pregnancy.
Thank you, said Harper.
We heard what happened to Pamela and Rupert.
Muttering a curse, Wyatt scrubbed a hand down his face.
I saw the crime scene photos. It was bad. Look, I'm guessing you suspect Macaulay of being involved, and I'm not surprised. If they died from a house fire, I'd suspect him too. But stabbing them to death?
Wyatt shook his head.
He's just a boy. You're right, he is, said Knox,
positioning himself close to Harper, protective and possessive. His demon didn't like her being around these people, and it watched Wyatt as it would a cobra.
But it's odd that the family seems to be dropping like flies.
Harper absent-mindedly put a protective hand on her stomach.
How's he been?
No different,
Wyatt sighed.
Linda dotes on him, but she gets no thanks for it.
Where is Linda?
Harper glanced at the doorway.
In the backyard, hanging up the laundry. She doesn't know you're here yet.
Somebody does.
Harper tipped her chin toward the doorway, where Macaulay's shadow could be seen, plain as day.
You might as well come in, kid.
The boy slowly entered the room, his movements mechanical. Knox turned to face him, still staying close to Harper.
Hello, Macaulay.
Hello,
he said simply. He looked up at Wyatt.
May I have a drink of water, please?
Harper almost shuddered. He was so polite, it was actually freaky. Wyatt's smile was forced.
Sure.
As Wyatt filled a glass with water, Macaulay turned to Harper. She felt his mind brush against hers and narrowed her eyes. That was very rude. Demons might be tactile, but they were fussy about who had the permission to touch them, whether physically or psychically. That was largely why her own demon was pissed.
What did he do?
Knox asked.
Touched my mind.
As Knox went rigid beside her, she curled her hand around his arm.
Don't give him a reaction.
You should be careful, she told Macaulay. A lot of demons would retaliate big time over something like that. The kid seemed completely unaffected by her warning.
You won't hurt me.
Harper arched a brow.
You sure about that?
You won't, he stated confidently. But your child will.
The words chilled her blood. But she didn't jump to the baby's defense, curious if that was what the little Cambion wanted. Her demon bared its teeth. It didn't like the boy one teensy-weensy bit. He took the glass of water from Wyatt.
Thank you.
Knox spoke before Macaulay could turn to leave.
I came to tell you that, unfortunately, Pamela and Rupert won't be coming back to see you.
I know, sir. Linda and Wyatt told me that they're dead.
Knox tilted his head.
You must be very upset to hear they're gone.
The boy nodded, then turned back to Harper.
Are you going to give your baby away?
She shook her head. No.
Even though it's bad?
The baby isn't bad, she told him.
My demon says it is.
I'll bet your demon says everyone's bad, she said. It doesn't want to share you. Does it want to hurt the people who are good to you? Does it get jealous? Macaulay didn't answer, but his shoulders stiffened. Was it jealous of your relationship with Pamela and Rupert? She asked.
Of course not, he said, tone flat. Why would it be?
Harper exchanged a look with Knox. At first, I thought he and the demon wanted revenge, she told Knox. What if the demon just wants rid of any competition to its parental role? At that moment, Linda walked into the room carrying a laundry basket. She'd obviously heard their voices because she didn't look surprised to see them. Her smile of greeting was strained.
Macaulay, why don't you go on upstairs?
With one last look at Harper, he turned and left the room as robotically as he'd entered. Only once they'd heard his bedroom door close did Linda speak again.
I suppose a congratulations is in order.
Envy was stamped all over her face as she stared at Harper's baby bump. Before anyone could thank her, Linda quickly added,
I'm guessing you're here about the Winters.
She placed the basket on the table.
Stabbed to death in their own home. Awful. Tragic.
She swallowed. Macaulay already knows. We told him.
It's sad that he won't have his biological family in his life.
Is it? Asked Knox.
Linda's attention snapped to him.
Of course.
He twisted his mouth.
You had no problems with him building a relationship with Pamela and Rupert?
Linda tugged on her sweater.
I won't deny that I'd like to keep Macaulay here, but I wouldn't begrudge him a relationship with the Winters.
Then why did you offer them money to stay away from him?
Knox sensed Wyatt's surprise, but he kept his eyes on Linda. She spluttered.
I did no such thing.
I have a witness that says you did.
Realization flashed across her face.
Daniel is mistaken. It wasn't like that.
You didn't try to bribe them?
It was a test. I wanted to know if they wanted him in their lives for the right reason. Pamela turned down my offer, and I apologized for making it.
She gestured to the doorway.
So, if that's all...
Don't ever dare dismiss me, Linda.
Knox clipped. The woman blanched, but it didn't appease his demon at all. Wyatt straightened, reflexively bristling, but he was wise enough not to interfere.
You've overstepped a few times since Macaulay came to stay here, Knox added. They were minor slips, so I overlooked them. It appears that I shouldn't have.
Linda's eyes darted from Knox to Wyatt and back again, but her mate didn't speak up for her.
I'm sorry. Truly, I'm just a little emotional right now. He's just a boy. I want to protect him, as any mother should, biological or adopted.
I never once led you to believe that Macaulay would stay here permanently.
Her mouth fell open in surprise.
He's happy here.
Happy?
Echoed Harper, frowning.
What makes you think so?
Linda licked her lips.
He's settled. He's content. Tell them, Wyatt.
But Wyatt didn't. He looked at the floor, clearly knowing better than to lie to his primes. Knox stared at Linda.
You truly believe that you have a bond with Macaulay?
It was slow coming, but yes, I believe we're starting to connect.
Then you're in danger. Surely you've noticed that Macaulay's behavior is not normal.
Seeing that she was about to object, Knox snapped.
Don't try bullshitting me, Linda. Open your fucking eyes. He is nothing like your average child. Not even a traumatized child.
He has trouble connecting with others, yes. But should we really expect anything else? His biological mother gave him away, and his human mother both neglected and tried to kill him.
Yes. Neither of his mothers were there for him, said Knox. From what I understand, his human father was no better. So, taking into account the behavior he displays, who do you think stepped in and raised him?
The implication sank in, and Linda shook her head sadly.
Maybe you're right, and Macaulay isn't dangerous. But his demon is. And I think his demon wants rid of anyone it believes is a threat to its parental role. You and Wyatt are threats.
She wrapped her arms around herself.
But he hasn't tried to hurt us.
Really? Not once?
Her eyes slid away.
They were accidents.
He burned her hand with hellfire when she tried to stroke his hair,
Wyatt said.
He shoved her hard when she once tried to kiss him. Just yesterday, she tumbled down the stairs mere moments after he growled at her to get out of his room.
It was his demon, not him,
Linda insisted.
Which supports my point.
Knox stepped forward.
You want a child, Linda? There are plenty out there who need a home and would accept and return the love you have to offer. Macaulay can't be that child for you. If you were honest, you would admit that you don't love him. You love the idea of having a child.
Squeezing her eyes closed, Linda said nothing. Finally, she opened them. The denial had been replaced by a sad acceptance.
Where will you take him?
It's best that you don't know that, Harper told her. Flicking a look at Harper's rounded stomach, she said,
If he's really a danger, I don't think it would be a good idea for him to stay with you.
No, neither did Harper.
He won't be staying with us.
Linda swallowed.
I'll go to him, explain what's happening, and pack him a bag.
Knox nodded.
Go with her, Wyatt.
No, please. I'd like some private time with him to say goodbye.
Knox inclined his head, and she scurried out of the room. Harper's brow pinched as she sensed Knox telepathically chatting with someone. When it seemed to have ended, she asked,
Who was that?
Larkin,
Knox replied.
I was checking that she was nearly here. We need her to give Macaulay a ride to his new home.
Knox didn't want the Cambion around Harper. Wyatt rubbed at his forehead.
I know this is the right thing to do for everyone. So, why do I feel like a bastard?
Because he's 6 years old, said Harper.
And you have a heart.
It was a good 10 minutes before Linda and Macaulay returned to the kitchen. Linda appeared hesitant and sad. Macaulay seemed to be completely unaffected. Wyatt crouched down to him.
Hey, buddy. It's a real shame that you have to leave. If you tell us that you're happy here, we can sort something out. You can stay.
But Macaulay didn't say a word. So Wyatt nodded and added,
Wherever you go, take some time to decide whether you'd like to come back here. You'll be welcome if you do. Take care of yourself.
Linda helped the boy slip on his coat, and then handed a rucksack to Knox.
Here's his bag. I packed some clothes and things.
Thank you,
said Knox.
I'm sorry it has to be this way, but it's necessary.
Linda rubbed her arm.
I know. I just wish it wasn't.
Knox gestured for Levi to leave the house first. Macaulay easily followed the sentinel outside without even a backward look at Linda or Wyatt. Linking his fingers with Harper's, Knox led her down the path with Tanner close behind them. Larkin was stood near an SUV where a few members of the force were waiting, having responded to Knox's summons.
"Is everything all right?"
she asked.
"Yes, I need you to take Macaulay to Elena and Andre's house. They're expecting him."
Knox then turned to Macaulay.
"This is Larkin, one of my sentinels. She will take you to a house not far from here. It's a place where many children stay who have no family to care for them. You'll have your own room, and you'll be safe there. Harper and I will keep an eye on you. Make sure things are going well for you. Does that sound good?"
"Yes, sir,"
replied Macaulay with no emotion whatsoever.
"You'll only be brought back here if you decide that it's what you want."
Knox wanted Macaulay and his demon to understand that Linda and Wyatt wouldn't push for him to return, just in case the demon viewed them as a threat. Macaulay nodded and then hopped into the SUV with Larkin. Harper waved to Macaulay as the SUV drove away, and he gave her the slightest wave. She turned to Knox.
"You arranged this with Elena and Andre in advance?"
Knox nodded.
"When you pointed out that the demon could be eliminating threats to its role, I knew I had to get him out of there."
"You think he'll be okay with them?"
"Neither Elena or Andre will try to parent him, so the demon shouldn't see them as competition. They're used to difficult children, and they're both powerful enough to ensure that Macaulay causes no harm to himself or anyone there."
Knox waited until they were inside the Bentley before he added,
"He touched your mind?"
"Yeah. It wasn't a shy touch, either. It was bold, deliberately rude."
"As if he was provoking you?"
"I got the feeling it was more like he was testing me."
But Harper had no idea what the test was supposed to be.
"His demon thinks you won't harm him."
Harper snorted.
"It's wrong. If the kid was any threat to me or mine, I'd disable him, no matter what it took. Considering I have an unborn child to protect, no one would blame me for it."
Not even Lou, despite his law that no child of any species should be hurt. Knox laid a hand on her stomach.
"Our child isn't bad."
"I know that. But Macaulay's demon seems determined to make him believe that everyone around him is a threat."
"Except you," Knox pointed out. "It told him that you wouldn't hurt him. Why?"
"I don't know."
As Levi began to drive, Knox's phone chimed. His conversation was short and sweet, one he felt like he'd had a dozen times over the past few days.
"That was Mila," he told Harper as he ended the call and tucked his phone back in his pocket. "Many of the primes have called to pass on their congratulations. In most cases, they're just courtesy calls, really. But some sounded genuinely pleased for us."
That surprised her.
"Like who?"
"Dario, Raoul, Malden, even Thatcher. But like all the others, they also sounded a little rattled by the news."
That didn't surprise her.
"We knew they wouldn't like the idea that there might soon be another being that's as powerful as you. There's nothing to say that our baby will be, but I doubt they'll take comfort in that."
She rolled back her shoulders.
"I'm nervous now that I know how widespread the news is. Have you heard from Jonas?"
"Yes, he also congratulated us, but his message was stiff and formal."
"I doubt Alethea will be pleased."
"Ha."
She may not care. She's had a long time to adjust to the idea of you and I together. She may be impulsive and petty, but she's not stupid. She knows that I see you as mine, and that I have no intention of letting you go. The fact that I gave you a black diamond spells it out loud and clear for her. Personally, I think the only reason she still flirts with me is just to upset you.
I'd agree with that, said Levi.
Harper frowned at the Reaper.
Eavesdropping, are we?
Levi ignored that.
One thing Alethea was never good at was letting go of an insult. I don't mean the sarcastic insults you like to shower her with. I'm talking slights to her character or ego.
He paused to take a sharp turn.
You already know that Nox's demon quickly got bored with females in the past. He warned them it would happen, but most still caused a fuss over it. Alethea didn't get upset that he didn't commit to her. She accepted it. But that was because Nox didn't commit to others either. Then you came along. Annie claimed you in a matter of months. Alethea had known him for centuries. To her, you're an imp. A Wallace. Someone completely beneath her. She can't understand why he could possibly want you when he could have her. Nox giving you something he'd never given to her, especially the ultimate commitment, is something she feels insulted by. She's tried to intimidate and manipulate you into leaving him, but nothing ever worked. That only makes it worse for her.
So you don't think she wants Nox?
Harper wasn't so sure she agreed with that.
I think she wants him, said Tanner. But I think she also knows it's not going to happen. Still, it doesn't mean she'll ever accept you as his mate. She'll hurt you however she can, just because it makes her feel better.
Harper thought about it a minute.
It's like she entered us into some kind of imaginary competition.
Nox wasn't really the prize, though, was he? Nox sighed.
I'm right here, you know.
Levi's mouth quirked, but he responded to Harper's question.
No. She might have won Nox, but the real prize was that she'd then feel like the goddess she believes herself to be. Alethea's kind can enchant and seduce any human. That's why she spends so much time around them. It makes her feel powerful to be the object of so many fantasies, to be able to manipulate and control people that way. For her, the ability to make any man want her equates to power.
Tanner nodded and threw Harper a brief look over his shoulder.
She's not used to being turned down. It makes her feel like she's without that power she's become so used to. But Nox chose you, not her. You took away her power. You made her feel weak. Just as it would make you feel weak if she took away your ability to fly or strike out at people with soul-deep pain. She'll never let that go.
Harper tossed Nox a look of irritation.
Did you really have to shake the sheets with such a fucking egotistical nutjob?
Nox chuckled.
I sincerely regret it. And I'm sorry that she tries so hard to hurt you. I'd offer to kill her, but you just tell me that you would rather deal with the matter yourself.
He pressed a soft, apologetic kiss to her mouth.
Forget about her. She's not important. Never was.
Tanner grinned.
Aw, that was cute.
Nox shot him a scowl.
It's really no wonder that Devon wants to kill you.
Tanner's grin widened.
The little hellcat wouldn't do that.
Harper snorted.
You persist in believing she's some cute little kitty that you could easily handle. One day, that attitude's gonna come back and claw you on the ass.
Literally.
That
didn't seem to bother Tanner at all. In fact, he looked like he'd enjoy it. Twisted.
Chapter 17. Leaning against the door jamb of Knox's home office a week later, Harper waited as he finished his call. He'd begun to spend more and more time at the mansion, doing meetings via teleconference whenever he could. She knew it was because his protective instincts were becoming harder to deal with, and she was guessing that his demon was also more at ease when she was around. Her own demon certainly preferred being at home and having Knox nearby. As he finally ended the call, she arched a brow.
"You busy?"
He didn't just stand. He sort of gracefully uncoiled from his seat, and she had no idea why she liked that so much.
"Never too busy for you. You know that," said Knox.
The baby's mind lightly touched his. It often responded to his voice that way, and it got to him every time. Rounding his desk, Knox tilted his head, tension mounting inside him as he took in her nervous expression.
"Something wrong?"
"No, I just have something to show you."
He smiled as realization dawned on him, and the tension in his muscles fell away.
"You're finally letting me see it?"
She pushed away from the door jamb.
"Yes, it's ready."
Knox draped his arm over her shoulders.
"Lead the way."
She hadn't let him in the nursery even once since she'd begun painting it, wanting it to be a surprise. She'd let him do a few things, such as assemble a pretty dragonfly mobile, and he suspected that was because she wanted to be sure he felt involved to some extent. But that was pretty much it. He hadn't complained. He'd sensed that she'd made it her project, and that designing it meant something to her. Since he wanted her happy, and since Meg had explained that it was a nesting instinct that was perfectly natural, he'd given Harper that. Once they reached the closed door of the nursery, she said,
"Don't forget, if there's anything you don't like, we can change it."
"I'm sure I'll like it just fine."
Twisting the knob, Knox pushed open the door, and his mouth almost fell open. Damn, the woman had been busy, and her hard work had paid off. He walked silently along the plush cream carpet and skimmed his hand over the side of the crib. Like the dresser, changing table, and rocking chair, it was a light, smooth pine. Woodland murals decorated the lemon walls and closet doors, matching the woodland-themed quilt. The most striking artwork was the large, white tree mural that spanned from floor to ceiling. The pine shelves were lined with the gifts she'd been given at the baby shower, stuffed animals, baby monitors, and a photo frame that held the baby's first ultrasound picture, a diaper pail and baby chair, both of which were also gifts from the baby shower, sat in the corner. The breeze